Evolution of War.
Introduction. As humans have evolved, so have their methods of fighting. And interestingly, each new approach to conquering the enemy has essentially pushed warring parties farther and farther away from each other, allowing them to fight at increasingly greater distances. As early as 400,000 years ago, people fought one another face to face with nothing more than sharpened sticks and animal bones. Later, during the Stone Age, they created the bow and arrow to achieve the same goal from a safer vantage point. But it wasn't until gunpowder was invented that our primitive actions transitioned into real firepower, able to take out the enemy from many yards away, and eventually, miles away. Today, we can drop bombs from thousands of feet in the air and launch attacks on whole nations through the use of a computer keyboard. The digital world has now made it possible for humans to stir up conflict without ever seeing, hearing, or even touching another person. Winning a war is no longer about who has the strongest army or the biggest cannon or the smartest commander. It's about who has the best technology. Managing cyber risks. The invention of the internet has led to the construction of an entirely new cyber universe where battles are always being waged and fortresses built. This digital environment offers a ton of modern challenges and forces us to consider how we can best defend the internet and our digital assets. Just like the days of old, when enemies were defeated through awareness and skill, concerned users must continue their search for new ways to protect themselves, using the resources, expertise, and knowledge available in the digital world today. We know a vulnerability is just a weakness, and a threat is the exploitation of that weakness, but both realities pose real risk with real consequences. How we assess and mitigate that risk and address those consequences is entirely up to us. To protect yourself from the theft of valuable online assets, like financial databases, software codes, and company records, you have to consider the methods that might be used, which is a form of risk assessment. To be clear, any kind of assessment, whether it be related to vulnerability or risk, is simply an evaluation or estimation of something's overall quality and ability. Let's use a sports analogy here to see how risk can be effectively assessed. Pretend your online assets are in the end zone of a football field. Risk assessment is the defensive strategy you must use to keep your opponents from gaining access to your end zone. As part of your preventative strategy, you need to consider all the possible attack vectors, or paths by which your opponents can threaten you. Then you must properly defend those paths, especially the weaker areas where they are likely to hit the hardest. Hackers behave similarly. They look for areas in the digital landscape where they can make the biggest hit and get the biggest prize. Risk assessment concepts. There are four risk assessment concepts that have to be considered together in order to mount the strongest defense. Vulnerability. As we know, a vulnerability is a weakness or gap in the effort to protect ourselves. An unlocked car door can leave your assets vulnerable to theft, while a weak password can leave your information vulnerable to hacking. Vulnerabilities are what hackers are looking to exploit. So, just as a knight dresses in chainmail, the more you can protect your vulnerable points, the more likely you and your data will survive to fight another day. Threat. Just like it sounds, a threat is anything capable of exploiting a vulnerability, either intentionally or accidentally, and then obtaining, damaging, or destroying an asset. A computer virus is an example of a real-life threat because it has the ability to wreak havoc on your computer assets. At this level, you want to consider which threats would be most likely to exploit your specific vulnerabilities. Back to our knight example, places like the underarm that are less protected by chainmail would be vulnerable to the threat of a sword or knife stab. Risk. A bit different from threat, a risk is the potential for loss, damage, or destruction to an asset. Once a threat is set up to exploit your vulnerability, a risk develops. A hacker may be a threat, but once your computer is compromised, you're at risk of losing your online information. Impact. This final piece is analogous to a worst-case scenario. If a vulnerability exists and a threat finds its way in so that a risk becomes reality, there will be consequences that could impact your security in myriad ways. Maybe money is lost. Maybe information disappears. And maybe people even get hurt as a result. A serious breach in online security can have a major impact on all areas of life, both online and in the real world. Risk assessment models. Threat modeling. Given that all online systems have at least some level of vulnerability, cybersecurity tends to focus a lot of attention on the big bad wolf, otherwise known as a cyber threat. For this reason, there is a process in place known as threat modeling, which allows experts to work through various digital scenarios as a way to tighten security. This procedure identifies objectives and vulnerabilities and allows security efforts to focus on what's most important. What are you building? What can go wrong? What can you do about it? Answering these questions can lead to effective threat models. The truth is that unbreakable security gets broken all the time, so perhaps the term security really means secure until it's not. But that reality should not affect our willingness to try and keep it from breaking. The best way to model threats against computer systems is to step into the criminal's shoes, adopt their mindset, and consider all the different ways they might attack. When done properly, effective countermeasures can be created to stop any harmful efforts and establish some level of real security. This involves understanding what attackers want, how far they are willing to go to get it, and how skillful they are. And maybe, just maybe, this information will help you discover their identity and stop them for good. Attack tree. A formal and logical method for thinking about this is to create an attack tree, where a visual tree-like design illustrates the stages of an attack. Starting with the goal of the attack at the top, say like breaking into a bank safe, the attack tree will flesh out all the possible ways that goal might be achieved. Maybe the attacker will somehow learn the combination, pick the lock, or just blast it open with an explosive device. All of these options would ultimately gain entrance to the safe. Then, each of those possibilities are further broken down into subcategories to explore how they might happen. For example, what are some ways an attacker might learn the combination? They could steal the combination from the manager's desk drawer, eavesdrop on someone's phone conversation, or even pay an employee to reveal it. Once all those strategies have been documented, a hierarchy of approaches begins to emerge, and it becomes easier to envision how you might defend against them, such as, don't leave the combination lying around, watch what you say in the presence of others, make sure your staff is loyal, and so on. Risk responses. So, are all risks the same? Definitely not. The risk of losing $1 in a bet is not nearly as serious as the risk of losing your life savings in Las Vegas. While the risk of losing your identity to a hacker is obviously a serious one, the risk of losing military codes to an international enemy is quite a bit worse. Risks can and should be ranked based on the severity of impact. Why? Because then you can design the best way to face that risk, given its specific characteristics. Here are some possible responses to perceived risk. Mitigate it. Shrink it. Reduce it. Make it as small as you can. This usually happens when the risk is high. The bigger the potential impact, the more reasons you have to lower the risk. The goal is to minimize the overall consequence of the risk as much as possible. Yes, the risk may still be present, but its likelihood will be greatly diminished. Avoid it. When the risk of an action is very, very high and there is a lot to lose, you may want to avoid that action entirely. For example, if you have a clean USB drive with a lot of important work data on it, but it's the only one you have in your pocket while you were at a public computer cafe and you really want to transfer a couple files to it, you might take a minute to think through the repercussions of potentially corrupting all your work data and decide that it would be better not to plug that drive in and come back to grab whatever you need at another time or from a safer network. Transfer it. This approach allows at least some of the risk to be shifted to another party, making a potential loss more manageable. While this approach is often linked with the financial world, it also happens in cybersecurity. People may take out insurance for information systems in order to transfer risk to a third party, rather than bearing it entirely on their own. This approach just makes risk-taking a bit safer. Accept it. If the risk is likely to be low impact, or less expensive than all the procedures you would have to put in place to mitigate it, you can accept the risk and deal with it. Risk acceptance happens when risk is low, when it is within your ability to deal with it, or when it won't injure you too badly to be affected by that risk. For example, you take a risk every time you connect a device to a public hotspot and then proceed to log in to different accounts. But you should be weighing this risk against the potential threat of data loss before you do so. Going ahead and connecting is accepting that risk. Ethical hacking and penetration testing. The time has come to discuss the digital do-gooders who roam the internet with positive intentions instead of bad ones, using their extensive knowledge and skill to make the landscape safer and more welcoming for everyone. Yes, they exist. Ethical hackers are computer experts who use their vast knowledge and skill to beat black hats at their own game. Fondly known as white hats, these benevolent forces come in many forms, from IT professionals to hired government experts to computer programmers to former black hats looking to turn themselves around. White hats have a uniquely fascinating role in cybersecurity because they must be able to think like a criminal and use what they discover to triumph for the side of good. There is no formal education involved with ethical hacking, mostly because it's such a new skill. But a bachelor's or master's degree in IT, computer science, or mathematics can provide a strong foundation. It's also possible for individuals with a military background, especially in intelligence, to transition into these roles. Ethical hacking is most commonly seen in the federal government and in large companies where information security can mean the difference between peaceful operations and a full-blown crisis. In the world of application security, ethical hacking takes the form of penetration testing, also called pen testing, where realistic scenarios are developed to test all related responses and results. There are two different pen testing approaches. Manual pen testing relies on people for success. This effort involves data collection, vulnerability assessment, actual target exploiting, and report preparation. Automated pen testing is faster, more efficient, and less reliable because it is conducted by a computer. It does not need human expertise and can be overseen by a person with minimal knowledge of the field. Here's a visual to compare and contrast the two types.
Manual pen testing. It requires an expert engineer to perform the test. It requires different tools for the testing. Results can vary from test to test. The tester must remember to clean up memory afterwards. It is exhaustive and time-consuming. An expert can analyze data and think like a hacker, finding vulnerabilities and establishing appropriate security responses. An expert can run multiple tests at once. Critically speaking, it is very reliable. Automated pen testing. It is automated and does not need expert oversight. It has integrated tools that do not need outside help. It has a fixed, unchanging result. It does not have memory. It is efficient, easy, and fast. It cannot analyze the situation, only offer results. It cannot run multiple tests. False positive results are considered high.
Most experts will agree the best approach to pen testing involves a potent combination of both these methods. Automated tools are excellent for initial periods of information gathering during the discovery phase. Once the automated tools have identified a target, the user can switch into manual assessment to actively exploit the vulnerability. Even when the application is large, an automated security scan works well, but it's important to remember any found vulnerabilities should be confirmed through manual analysis.
Why is pen testing so important? Click to find out. It allows companies to fix vulnerabilities before hackers find them. It gives a helpful second opinion and outside perspective on the company's security system. Pen testing is less expensive than cleaning up after a breach. Pen testing simulates an actual real-world breach.
The art of friendly war. Ethical hacking. Approximately 71% of cyber attacks these days come from outside forces. At least 40% of those intrusions have been identified as bona fide hackers, while the rest are former employees or paid contractors with malicious intentions. This ongoing threat is the main motivation behind the creation of ethical hacking, as it is one of the few methods through which organizations can strengthen their security posture. This is all well and fine, but how exactly do white hats hack in an ethical manner? Ethical hackers and their clients must determine the set of guidelines and limitations, or rules of engagement, ROE, by which they will conduct their testing. These can include how much time and money will be spent, any limitations as to where and what the hacker should test, as well as any legal restrictions, such as a non-disclosure or confidentiality agreement. Once a clear ROE has been established, the playing field is set, and the boundaries have been well marked, the ethical hacker is free to begin the art of discovery. Vulnerability assessment. This is the initial phase where the white hat looks for weaknesses within the boundaries provided. Once these vulnerabilities are flagged, they can be documented and reported, not exploited. Given the number of automated tools designed to run checks against networks, communication services, ports, routers, and OSs, this is typically a simple and cost-effective task. For example, white hats often use software programs like web application security scanners to perform automatic black box testing on a web application to identify its weak points. This software testing method investigates areas of the internal structure, design, and implementation that have not been clearly identified. As a tester, seeing inside the black box is impossible until certain errors are observed, like missing functions or a lack of overall functionality. Despite these impressive approaches, it's imperative to remember there is no silver bullet solution when it comes to security assessments, as it relies on a combination of effective tools, smart planning, and a whole lot of hard work. Penetration testing. The next step involves the pen testing process we know so well. After vulnerabilities have been identified and recorded, it's time to exploit them. The primary goal of this phase is to own the network, or at least to own it in as many different ways as possible, with the intent of highlighting system flaws. Many vulnerability assessment tools are still useful in this process. However, the ethical hacker will also use other methods to explore the very edges of the ROE and will remain focused on the objective at hand, avoiding all temptation to pursue other potentially interesting weaknesses, unless, of course, that goal is in the ROE. In general, the pen test can be broken down into three stages.
Discovery. This phase involves vulnerability enumeration, or laying out each finding one by one. Exploitation. The hacker tries to exploit the vulnerabilities that were found in the discovery phase in order to find out more about the weaknesses of the system. Reporting.
After the ethical hacker has completed pen testing and discovered all potential vulnerabilities, they report this information back to their client. Team colors. As another component used to evaluate the overall security of any given network or system, red teaming is derived from the military concept of identifying more about an opponent's strength by directly challenging it. In a digital scenario, the red team takes on the role of someone, like a former employee or black hat, who is challenging the security posture of the system or is playing the role of the enemy attacker. And you guessed it, the blue team refers to an opposing group of good guys who defend a system. In the 1990s, security experts began using red team, blue team simulation exercises as a way to test IT systems more effectively. In these situations, there is also a white team who remains neutral during the testing, acting as a mediator or judge. With all these teams working together, a complete security map of any organization can be established with the utmost integrity. System testing. This final system test exposes all system events for the organization in a realistic and understandable way. By placing a system, like a firewall, switch, network device, server, workstation, or application, under a microscope and looking at it in every possible way, including how it interacts with its digital environment, all attack vectors become clearer. Further study of these vectors, or directions, will provide even more information about the profile of a system's vulnerabilities. The main difference between this phase and the previous ones is implied through the word system, which means it does not run against an entire network, but focuses solely on the testing of one particular system at a time. Join the white hats. As you can imagine, blending the worlds of black and white can sometimes create a gray area in the hacking realm and in the larger pursuit of cybersecurity. Just think about the British security researcher Marcus Hutchins, who was arrested by the FBI in 2017 as he left an IT conference in Las Vegas. At just 22 years old, he had been instrumental in shutting down the devastating WannaCry attack a few months before, when he located a flaw in the ransomware that basically contained its viral spread. Although he had clearly been using his talents for good, the authorities accused him of also applying those skills to some criminal activity in the banking sector. He had allegedly dabbled in both black and white hat activities during his time behind the screen, a fact that made his role as an ethical hacker a little harder to accept. The hacking debate. For many, the whole idea of a friendly hack is riddled with problems, and Hutchins' case is a stark reminder to the digital world that the nature and context of these hacks can contain questionable motives. Many white hats live in fear that their contributions to cybersecurity's well-being might somehow be misinterpreted by authorities investigating any unrelated criminal activity. For example, it's entirely possible for code originally created by a white hat to be used later by a black hat in a completely unrelated breach. And if this code can be traced back to the original developer, there can be all sorts of legal questions involved, even if the person had nothing to do with the hack itself. Frankly speaking, any person with skill enough to mastermind exploits and manipulate the internet in any way can become tainted by suspicion at some point. So the debate about whether it's ever appropriate to engage in ethical hacking is one worth considering. If you think back a few units, you will recall some discussion about tech-savvy lawbreakers who engage in hacktivism, or the act of breaking into a computer system for politically or socially motivated reasons. Using the same tools and techniques as a cybercriminal, hacktivists conduct their shady business for a variety of beliefs, all of which have personal significance or value. They might do it to draw attention to a certain cause, shake up the status quo, disrupt the services of big, untouchable corporations, or launch a harmful campaign against a perceived enemy. Anything that draws attention to their message. Hello, Anonymous. It's nice to meet you. For some people, there is never a good reason to break the law. For others, like the hacktivist group Anonymous, there are valid motivations to committing targeted cyberattacks. First established in 2003, Anonymous grew to be a sign of anarchy in the digital community, where hackers were distinguished by the hacking campaigns they launched against government agencies, religious sects, and the entertainment industry. Although their overall mission is diluted by the many thousands of Anons they employ, they are credited with targeting groups and organizations who favor internet censorship and control. And their devious actions are a reminder to the digital world that nothing is off limits in cyberspace. If you have the right hacking skills, that is. Supporters in the community have labeled them as freedom fighters and digital Robin Hoods. However, other less admiring groups have described them as cyber lynch mobs with a terrorist agenda. Regardless of how you feel about their methods for gaining attention, Time magazine dubbed them one of the 100 most influential people in the world in 2012. So, even though their practices of internal dissent are clearly illegal, their influential status opens up an interesting discussion about the power and purpose of hacking.
Knowledge check. Test your knowledge of new information by answering these questions and then review the feedback. Question 1. Jacob is a security administrator at a company, and he is setting up a risk response plan. Because the company is geographically located in a place that experiences hurricanes and frequently floods, Jacob is eager to address the risk that weather poses to their data. Which of the following responses would be best for this risk? Avoid the risk by moving the entire company to a place without flooding or hurricanes. Moving an entire company is not the best way to address this risk. Consider an option that deals with the risk while allowing the company to stay put. Mitigate the risk by having an off-site location where backups are stored. By mitigating the risk through off-site backups, Jacob's company will have the assurance that their data is backed up and safe, regardless of any physical damage to the company's building. Transfer the risk by having proper flood insurance. Although having flood insurance is probably necessary, it is not the best way to treat the risk to the data. Consider an option that addresses the safety of the data in particular. Accept the risk by just dealing with any loss that hurricanes or flooding bring. Accepting the risk is not the best solution, because data loss would be quite detrimental to the company. Consider an option that focuses on the safety of the data. Question 2. Liliana is an ethical hacker who is currently working for a small company as a pen tester. She is compiling a document that lists all of the vulnerabilities she is finding in the company's systems. What phase of pen testing is she most likely in? Discovery. The discovery phase involves documenting each vulnerability in order to exploit it in the next phase. Exploitation. Exploitation involves actually breaching the system by using the vulnerabilities previously found. Consider a phase that focuses on finding and documenting weaknesses. Reporting. The reporting phase involves summarizing the findings from the pen testing and recommending how to make the system more secure. Consider a phase that focuses on finding and documenting weaknesses. Vector. Vector is not a pen testing phase. Rather, it refers to the direction or route that a hacker takes to exploit a vulnerability. Consider a phase that focuses on finding and documenting weaknesses. Question 3. Which of the following is not a usual motivation for a hacktivist to breach a system? To raise awareness of a certain cause. This is a common motivation for hacktivists, as it is a socially motivated reason. Consider an option that is neither a political nor social reason. To oppose a big corporation. This is a common hacktivist motivation, especially when the big corporation has lots of power. Consider an option that is neither a political nor social reason. To discredit a political opponent. Political reasons are common motivations for hacktivists. Consider an option that is neither a political nor social reason. To gain thousands of dollars. Hacktivists typically are motivated by political or social reasons, not money.
Conclusion. Once again, we are reminded that not everything is simply black and white, even in the digital world. The same motivations, desires, and misdeeds we see in real life are also alive and well in cyberspace. So it's important to recognize them if you hope to find protection. This includes understanding the debatable practice of ethical hacking and hacktivism, both of which greatly influence our online experiences.